Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 63 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Geltaka. Thanks for joining me again. As you guys know, this is, as you can have already guessed, this is not going to be a typical podcast. We had an unimaginable, horrific, murderous rampage tear across Nova Scotia a couple of days ago, and nothing is going to be the same as it was before. Just, I wouldn't have, if someone would have said 3 months ago, hey, you know, in a couple of months, this is what's going to happen. As much as I can imagine how evil people are, I could not have imagined what actually took place there. So personally, I've been thinking about it a lot, and I can't imagine what these people have gone through. My words are completely meaningless. They're useless. But for what it's worth, you know, our small team here at the CCFR, our hearts go out to those who are affected directly and indirectly by what happened there. I wish there was something I could do. I just, you can't help but feel completely helpless when something like this happens. Anyway, what I will tell you about this podcast is you will not want to miss a minute of it, okay? It's going to be really important. And don't forget, you got to share this podcast around. You got to tell people to listen to it. There's a lot of really good information here, important information. All right. So what I'm going to do in this podcast is I'm going to bring on my friend Mark Petrone. He is a longtime news talk radio host. He's got his own show on Saga 960 in Mississauga, Ontario. And he's going to come on, and we're going to talk a little bit about the political agenda behind a lot of the actions after the rampage, and also talk about he's got an insider's view in Canadian mainstream media as well. He's a former CRTC commissioner, as well as being in media the majority of his life. So it's really rare that I get somebody like him to come on our tiny little podcast. So what happens is after I'm finished with a couple of things, I'm going to flip right over and bring Mark on. So next, I will also have another guest who is Noah Schwartz. Now, Noah is a PhD candidate in political science from Carleton University. And Noah wrote a couple of firearm articles. I read them and they are good. It didn't stop other academics and other anti-gun people from trying to tear him in half, because it's not about right and wrong with them, right? It's about right and left with them. And that's what's really hurting our country. But yeah, it's the usual suspects and their usual behavior, which is, of course, abhorrent. But anyway, Noah has taken personal risk to try to, you know, take an objective look at this whole gun control thing. And thus he's doing our community a real service, because we don't need someone to be partisan. We just need somebody to be honest. So I'm really happy to have him on the podcast. And he'll also talk about a new project that he's got going on as well that he needs your help with. Now, before I bring Mark on, I got one more thing I want to talk about. Now, a couple of people have been asking me for an update on the National Education Program. This is the update that I have for you. So when the COVID-19 lockdown happened, you know, there was no sense rolling out this program. I had one guy send me a really abusive email saying that now is the time. And, you know, it sounds like, well, no, it's not the time. People are dying. And there's all kinds of, you know, people are being ruined financially. The country's being ruined financially. You know, it's not all about us all the time. And I'm not implying that's what he was saying, but I just, you know, you got to have I try to keep as much perspective as I'm intellectually capable of, which is not any more than anyone else. Right. So anyway, I didn't want to launch the campaign now because people have higher priorities and it probably would have been wasted money in my opinion. We continue to roll out pieces of it, which is what I want to tell you about right now. So we are rolling out the first piece of the National Education Program right now, which is the online quiz. Now, let me explain this to you really quickly, as quick as I possibly can. So if you go to gundebate.ca, there may be a glitch or two. I'm recording this on Wednesday afternoon. You guys are hearing it Thursday morning. But if everything goes well, our web developer is working on it as we speak. But basically, if you go to gundebate.ca, you'll see a new website and there'll be an online quiz. So there's two online quizzes. There's a basic quiz, which is true and false, 15 questions. And then there's an advanced quiz, which is multiple choice, 10 questions. And basically, if you do this quiz and you pass, we give you We give you all the answers, you know, so it's not hard to pass. You just need to, you know, focus for a few minutes, right? But basically how it works is when you sign up, you just need your name and your email. You sign up to do the quiz. There's a video, and the video, I think, for the basic is 17 minutes, and it's me giving you all of the answers to the whole quiz. If you want to just fill it out, and your reward for filling it out is you get entered into a draw for 50 $50 Amazon gift cards, okay? So if you get some questions wrong, the minute that you submit the exam, it tells you what your score is, and it gives you all the answers, again, with individual supplementary videos and links and references and everything. So you can see clearly that everything that we're talking about in the quiz is true. And I mean, I can't lie to you anyway, because I'm an instructor still with the RCMP Canadian Firearms Program. I can't tell you a bunch of lies about the licensing system, for God's sakes. But anyway, if you need, if you needed more than that, that's what you have. So the same thing for the advanced quiz. If you pass the basic quiz, you can continue on to the advanced quiz. And if you pass the advanced quiz, you get another entry. So you can get two entries just by taking the basic and the advanced quiz. Now, the purpose of this whole thing is to send to non-gun owners. So if somebody's yapping on social media or in your family or an acquaintance, they're yapping about how we need more gun control, you can say, okay, that's very insightful, obviously. You must know what the existing regulations and laws are, right? You probably know the existing system the back of your hand because you know it's not sufficient. So if somebody's honest, some people will say, oh, I know all I need to know. And, you know, because there are a lot of poisonous people out there right now. And that population is growing within Canada, you know, and that they don't need to know anything, but they're still your enemy. And that's bad. That's not a good thing. But if they're honest, so they're like, yeah, you know what? I don't really know what the existing system is. Boom. And send them right over there to gundebate.ca, and they can test their knowledge and they'll learn a thing or two. And they can also win some free stuff from Amazon. They don't even have to go out to do the shopping. Okay. So that's what we formulated. So your job now is to share that everywhere, is to challenge everybody. We're sending it to every journalist in Canada. We're sending it to our emailing list. We are going to spread this as far and wide as we can. So, you know, if you have an email list at your gun club or at your university or at, you know, your union or whatever, use it. Send this to everybody. The more people that take this quiz, the more people that are educated to what our gun laws are today in this country. And they're answering. And the whole point is to answer this question. Are gun laws in Canada, are firearms loosely regulated in Canada? And the answer is absolutely not. Firearms are very tightly regulated in Canada. So if we can change the public's view about something, that's what we got to change. Because all this stuff from the spin docs and Coalition for Gun Control, they spin lies nonstop and no one holds them accountable for it. They're easily demonstrable lies and no one holds them accountable. So, you know, we got to educate people ourselves. It's our only hope right now. So anyway, spread the quiz, gundebate.ca. Go ahead and do that. I'm going to switch over and bring Mark on right now. Then I'll have a commercial. We'll come back with Noah, and then I'll do the sign off. So thanks for listening. Let's bring Mark on right now. All right, I'm super excited. On the Skype, I have Mark Petrone, who is a longtime news talk radio host. He's currently has his own show on Saga 960, ex commissioner of the CRTC. How's it going, Mark?
Excellent, Rod. Good to be on the podcast.
I really appreciate you doing this. It's not very often I have like journalistic royalty on the show.
Yeah, I don't consider myself royalty for anything, but you know, nice of you to say. I'm just I do the best I can on the show. I try to tell the truth. I try to be honest. I try to give people a voice, many of whom don't have a voice. You know, many on the conservative side of the political spectrum don't feel they get a fair shake with the media, so they gravitate towards my show, and I do very much appreciate that. I'm, you know, honored really to be playing that role.
Well, you clearly didn't get the memo. So, all right. So, I just wanted to bring you on to provide a little bit of color, because, you know, obviously this, the rampage in Nova Scotia is the biggest and worst thing to happen in 30 years. But unfortunately,
We have people in our society, meaning specifically the anti-gun groups, and specifically all of them, because they penned an open letter to Bill Blair before the victims of this rampage were even counted. Before we even knew how many victims there were, they were already calling for gun control. So just totally crass and unconscionable behavior. So I kind of wanted to cover these things. And I thought, you know what? Who better to keep me on track and, you know, keep me out of Facebook jail than Mark?
Well, I appreciate what you, but I know that you and your members feel terrible about what happened in Nova Scotia. I lived in Nova Scotia for years. I raised a family there and spent a huge chunk of my career in that province. So I can tell you that they are a proud people, that they are devastated by what has happened, and they are grieving intensely and doing a lot of soul searching today. So my heart, and I know your heart feels exactly the same way, Rod, that, you know, first and foremost, we have to share in the pain and grief of those people, the family members, in particular, the province of Nova Scotia today.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been, when this first hit, I've been thinking about it nonstop, and oddly enough, I guess I would consider myself pretty tough emotionally, and I actually have had some anxiety for a number of reasons, but the sheer scale of the destruction, it's an unimaginable tragedy. And if someone would have said, you know, this is what Canada is going to experience, somebody's going to do something like this in Canada, I wouldn't believe it. Like, I really wouldn't, you know. I know there's evil, but I don't think anyone in those communities will ever be the same. You know, for me to think about what if I lived there and I experienced that, or even was touched by any of this, even indirectly, it just, I'd be thinking about it constantly. So as I mentioned in the outset, you know, before we even knew how many victims there were, the anti-gun folks had already issued this letter, and I was shocked. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic or overdramatic. Like, I was literally shocked at this letter, how it was written and how insensitive it was. The letter, you know, is full of lies, which is typical for these people. Unfortunately, no one else calls out their lies. I have to do it, speaking just into the wilderness, because, you know, we're not allowed on mainstream media. We'll talk about that in a second. But they took time in that letter to throw insults at the CCFR. I mean, this was their number one priority after something like this happens. I couldn't believe it.
And were you asked to comment on their story?
You know, this is the most bizarre thing, Mark, you're ever going to hear. You're going to fall out of your chair, so hang on to the desk. The only mainstream media outlet that called us for a response, because, you know, we were clearly named, and while we weren't named in the letter, but we were named in the comments from Dr. Philip Berger, one of the founders of the Canadian Doctors for Protection from Guns. The only outlet that called was the Toronto Star.
Well, it was their story. I mean, well, the CBC did the story as well, correct? Like, I didn't see their stories. I saw the headline in the Toronto Star story on Twitter. As soon as I saw it, I just moved on, because I knew what it was. I knew what it was intended to do. I knew it was basically intended to give the Prime Minister, the Liberal government in Ottawa, as much cover as possible to move ahead with a ban on semi-autos before the facts were even out. It's like, yeah, we want to be able to justify this action, and so they're attacking you. I mean, it was a preemptive strike. That's really what it was. Let's attack them before they attack the Prime Minister. That's really what that was about, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's, you know, as far as their actions are concerned, and I mean the anti-gunners and even the Liberals, although they haven't done anything yet, you know, this thing's happened. It's still in progress, basically. You know, the shooting had stopped, but we didn't even know how many people were affected. And they're out with that letter, and, you know, subsequently Blair wants to talk about gun bans and whatnot. So we didn't know, you know, what guns he used, how he got them, whether he's licensed, whether he wasn't, whether this stuff was smuggled. We don't know anything really about what happened that day. So there was only one reason for them to do what they did, and it was to redirect the sorrow of Canadians and the sorrow they're feeling before they have a chance to process it. Because what's the danger of waiting? What's the danger of, like, the CCFR? I waited. I put out a statement. It's like, hey, you know what? It's not the time for politics right now. Like, it really isn't. And I'm not trying to like, you know, be sanctimonious. Like, it just really isn't. This is a horrific event. Just leave it for a day or two if you don't mind. And they couldn't. And they were feeling the burn a little on social media. And they're like, well, you know, the time is now. It has to be done now. It's like, well, why? What is the danger of waiting a week and then debating it? Because you are leveraging the sorrow of that community. There's no other explanation.
I agree. I mean, if there was a sense of urgency about it, then why wouldn't they have done it sooner? Why wait until after the massacre before doing it? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if this was all important, if this was something that had to get done, then why wait till now? Why wait till this? No, they are exploiting this massacre to their shame, Rod, in order to try and push through an agenda which their far left base, because let's face it here, we're talking about people who are radicals. We're talking about radical people who had this agenda from the get-go, and they were just sitting around waiting, figured it was only a matter of time before something was going to happen to allow them to do what they want to do. And so that whole thing about the sense of urgency, we got to do it now, that is bogus. On the face of it, that is a lie. Because if it was urgent, then they would have done it sooner. They would have done it months ago. But no, they have to wait for the right time, the right incident, in order to serve as a pretext, in order to ram through a political agenda that they know is unpopular.
Yeah. And it's amazing, because I'm listening to you talk about it, and I'm like, well, this is the reaction that all Canadians should have to this behavior. And it's still very rare. You know, another thing I wanted to talk to you about is right now we're in a bit of a dispute with the CBC. So the CBC went out of their way yesterday to chase down the Spin Doctors for Protection from Guns for comment. So the CBC has actually played a preemptive, active role in trying to roll this into a discussion about gun control, when we don't even know if anything about this event. But, you know, hey, it's got to be useful for that. And so we found out about that. And then we requested, because what they're going to get, just so people know, what the doctors are going to get is something called a syndicated interview, meaning that they're sitting, you guys may have remembered that we did one of those. You're going to be sitting at your desk, or you'll be in a studio somewhere, and you'll get repeated phone calls. There's kind of a switchboard thing happening, and you'll do 30 interviews over the course of 3 hours. We had to split it between Tracy Wilson and myself just to do it, and we did 24 in 3 hours. So they offered this to the doctors. We found out about it. We're like, hey, you know, are you guys going to provide an opposing view? They ignored us for a day and a half. Now, I complained to the ombudsman, and his answer was like, oh yeah, well, you know, it's up to the producer, but here I'm forwarding this to the director of whatever, right? Programming. And just so you know, he has 20 days to respond. Like, yeah, it's just unbelievable.
There's nothing independent about that ombudsman. That ombudsman basically works under the head of the CBC. So you're not going to get a fair shake from somebody who has a direct stake in protecting the CBC, because he works under the head of the CBC, whatever her face is. I can't remember her name at the moment. But that's the way the structure is based. Now, if you wanted to get a fair shake, your only complaint really is to go to the CRTC. You might get a break that way. You might get somebody to listen to you, one of the commissioners, but you're certainly not going to get a fair shake from anybody at the CBC. They are fake news, Rod, just like the Toronto Star. Okay? They're interested in pushing through an agenda which is completely in line with what the Liberals want to do, because the fate of the CBC is tied in with the Liberal Party, right? So you cannot have an independent media source when their livelihood, when the future, the funding of their little crown corporation is tied directly to the fate of the CBC. or to the government, to the Liberal Party. They work for the Liberal Party. They do not work for the people of this country. They work for them. They are in the service of the Liberal Party. That's all the CBC does now. They've been reduced to nothing more than a complete and utter mouthpiece for the Liberal Party of Canada. And that's pretty much for the same for the Toronto Star, which gets, what, $150,000 a week in order to try and keep the lights there on over there at the Toronto Star. But you have to remember, Rod, that these organizations have no credibility anymore. These organizations have lost whatever sense of objectivity that they might have otherwise had. So the people do not believe the CBC anymore. They're a joke. That's why their audiences have tanked. That's why they had to get rid of local news, because it was an embarrassment to see that like 1% of households were tuned into local news at CBC. Their national news is down to what, 200,000-300,000 a night? You know, for the tens of millions of dollars in tax money that is spent to produce that newscast, what, they've been reduced to a tiny, tiny fraction of the audience. And so they have no credibility. What have they got left, Rod? All they've got is the government of Justin Trudeau. That's what they are hanging on to, because that's, they know that the only ones supporting them are the government. And the government is using the CBC as their mouthpiece. But let me tell you something else. The government knows that the CBC has no credibility. That's why they had to buy up all the other media as well. It wasn't enough that they controlled the CBC, because they know that the CBC is a joke and doesn't have any credibility, and people don't bother with their content anymore. So that's why they had to spend $600 million of our money, you know, propping up many of the other media sources. You bring them all in, you pay them all off, and that way you have, you know, the same message, right? Everybody's singing from the same song sheet. The same liberal talking points, everybody's saying the same things. That's the state of media in this country right now. It's pathetic. I'm ashamed of it. I came from that world. But what's left for me, Rod, is to expose them. That's why I'm glad to be on this podcast talking to you about this stuff.
I brought you on to calm me down.
Oh, believe me. Oh, you know, I rip these people on a daily basis. I laugh at them. I expose them. They're a joke. They are a disgrace. I don't know how they get up in the morning and look themselves in the mirror. What, they look at themselves and go, gee, look at me. Aren't I a great journalist? No, you're a joke. You're a laughingstock. You go into work, you take the people's money at the CBC. And for what? So you can be a mouthpiece for Justin Trudeau? I mean, do these people have any idea of what a joke they are? And sometimes I really have to shake my head. Because, and I know, I understand why they attack other media and why they attack organizations like yours, because you guys have credibility amongst your members, and they're frankly afraid of it because they have no credibility themselves. You know, what I detect in the CBC now, Rod, is a sense of desperation. They know that they have lost any sense of trust with the people of this country, the very people that spend over $1 billion of their money, you know, money that we can ill afford right now on the CBC. We spend over $1 billion of our money on them, and they know that we think they're a joke. They know they have no credibility. And I tell you, it eats away at them. It may not be obvious, but they know.
Well, I kind of feel like us, you know, I don't like to paint with a broad brush because I don't like it when people do this to gun owners. But I think a lot of people that work for the CBC, they don't know. They think that they are ruling the world, and it's the same mindset, and it's the same approach to being, as you see in the anti-gun groups, and you see in a lot of aspects of our society now, where it's like, if I get control of something, I'm calling the shots, and too bad for you, you nameless troll, you lost. And this dismissive, I don't know, malevolent, you know, jeering view of other Canadians is really damaging. The fabric of our society is starting to tear. And I wrote back to the ombudsman and said, hey, listen, you may think that you guys have won and this is a big joke to you, that the CBC is your plaything, but this is causing real damage. This is literally destroying our society. And so, you know, be under no illusions, like you're part of this. And as I said, I don't know what he responded, but anyway,
I'm sorry about that beeping sound, Rod. I'm in a building. I have a condo. And I think they're, well, they usually, that sound usually goes off when they want people out of the building for some reason.
Well, not a problem. I think what we'll do is, I mean, I've capitalized your time long enough, but I appreciate you coming on. And would you come back? Would that be okay, Mark?
I'll come back anytime you want.
Well, thanks for doing it. And we'll do it again soon.
All right. Thank you, Rod.
Hey, everybody. This is Rod from the CCFR. In 4.5 years, we've created the most sophisticated and influential firearm rights organization in Canadian history. And when I say we, I mean our team and all of you who have trusted and supported us financially and as volunteers. Together, we've produced television shows, made our presence very well known on Parliament Hill, and taken on the anti-gun establishment as never before. We are in unprecedented times in Canada and around the world. Our goal is to continue to develop the CCFR into an even more formidable organization to better fight for your right to own and use firearms when stability returns. If you can afford it, please continue to support the CCFR by keeping your membership current and/or donating. If you are unemployed, do not do these things. We are an organization with values, and family comes first. If you're in this situation and you still want to support the CCFR, do it by sharing our explainer videos, the podcast, our reports, or our TV show, which is now available for free online on the CCFR YouTube channel. We can come out of this stronger than ever. Look after yourself, your family, and your community. And thank you for supporting the CCFR in any way that works for you.
All right, via Skype, we've got Noah Schwartz, and Noah is a PhD candidate in political science at Carleton University. Thanks for coming on, Noah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great, I'm happy to, and you've done some interesting work lately. So there's always a kind of a lack in Canada, at least, of firearm-related research. We always are always looking to the U.S. for information and stats and data. And then we try to transpose it. And when I say we, really anti-gun folks, try to transpose it to a Canadian conversation. And so what's kind of exciting about having you on is you're actually looking into the gun debate in Canada and the data. So I know that you've done some research. You've written a couple of articles recently. Do you want to talk about maybe those two articles that you wrote, and we'll start from there?
Yeah, that would be great. So I was really lucky. I had a chance to write an article for the Toronto Star where I got to debate Minister Blair on the assault weapons ban. As a researcher, you have to be very careful about what you speak out on publicly because, you know, every time you speak out in the public eye, it's really your credibility that's on the line. But when I heard about the things that were going on, I realized that, you know, as a student of policy, I really had a responsibility to speak out. Because the government, you know, there's just so little evidence to support the government's position on the assault weapons ban. They really couldn't provide any sort of concrete data to support their position, or even a concrete definition of what they wanted to ban. And I didn't see anyone in the media or in academia calling them out on that, which I found really concerning. So I wrote an op-ed piece for the Star, and I was really, really pleasantly surprised, not only that they took it up and that they published it, but just by the bipartisan support that it got, I really heard people on all sides of the political spectrum come up to me and say that they found the argument convincing, which, you know, really gave me hope that firearms policy can be fact-based and evidence-based when we get that information out there. The piece that I published most recently was in The Conversation, and it was sort of based on similar motivations. I'd seen since this horrible COVID-19 outbreak and quarantine that we've been dealing with, a lot of articles coming out about the spike in gun sales in the U.S. and Canada. And like you said, a lot of the sort of background information on this was really motivated by the United States. And these articles were drawing comparisons between Canada and the U.S. that were unfair, and they were leaving out some of the most important differences. A lot of these articles sort of would mention, you know, this is happening in the United States, this is happening in Canada as well, and they would leave out really critical information for people who don't know much about this issue. So they would leave out, you know, in Canada, you have to have a license to buy a firearm. It takes, you know, 4 to 6, 8 months to get your license. So once again, I felt I really had a responsibility to try to reach out and correct that and say, you know, whoa, there's some big differences here that we have to talk about. There's a process, you know.
Well, that's great, and it's appreciated. Obviously, we appreciate anybody trying to bring facts back into this argument. I read both articles. The one with Bill Blair was very predictable. You came with kind of facts and some reasonable, digestible points that make sense, make common sense. And then Bill Blair responds, not in a debate. He just responds with all the liberal talking points. And I mean, they're verbatim. Like, I don't even think they were edited. So I would be very suspicious that Bill Blair even looked at that stuff. I think his comms guy probably just cut and pasted, you know, stuff from every statement he's ever made in there. And it's all hyperbole and it's all political speak. There's no, in fact, if you do go to, just for fun, if you do go to the article in the Toronto Star, it's called The Big Debate. Is it? No.
Yes,
the big debate. And I'm, if you just search around on Twitter, you'll find it. If you search around and with the if you just keyword search, you'll find it. It's interesting because Bill Blair, the first couple of lines were his position, and then right after that, it just turns into, well, nobody should have these guns. There's no facts there. It's like, well, these people have been calling for you know, an end to the private ownership of these guns. And like, it's always like, you know, these people are calling for it. You know, these things shouldn't exist. There's no reason for us to have them. It's like nothing is pegged to this is how we're going to solve the problem. It's really interesting.
And I think it ties into to the really the urgency of having more made in Canada data on not only, you know, the basic facts of which policies work to reduce crime, but also on public opinion data, because I think that the public conversation on the topic is quite skewed. And when, you know, Minister Blair refers to the people asking for this, he's talking about a certain group of people, because we're not really hearing the voices of everybody. And I think that that's why having some of this more opinion research and trying to get the views of gun owners out there into the conversation can really help bring maybe some of that balance back.
Well, speaking of which, you have a study or a survey coming out. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. As you know, we mentioned at the beginning, there's a ton of research coming from the U.S. on firearms policy and on gun owners. But there's really, really very little coming from Canada. And often when this research is done in Canada, it's sort of doing a comparison to the United States. So, you know, it's not even really about Canada. It's about comparing Canada and the States. So from an academic perspective, there's really very little known about Canada's over 2 million licensed gun owners. And what this does is it really creates a blind spot for researchers. And I think it's a big contributing factor to the misinformation in the public debate. So when I was doing the initial sort of scrub of the literature for this, I could find no studies in the past 2 decades that have been done of Canadian gun owners. And I found this really shocking because, you know, if you think about it, these are the people that are going to be most impacted by the policies that the government's proposing. And yet there's nothing written about gun owners in the academic literature. So I decided to kind of take advantage of the fact that unfortunately everybody's stuck at home for the foreseeable future and design a survey to try to hopefully learn more about Canadian gun owners and help to bring them into that academic conversation. Because we know that when populations are under-researched, they tend to become underrepresented. Policymakers, you know, they make decisions based on the available information. So when there are blind spots in that information, they fill in the blanks with the information that's circulating in the media, which, as we know, is heavily influenced by the United States, or they rely on information from some of these advocacy groups. So I really want to make sure that they have information on, you know, gun owners, the people who are going to be impacted by these policies when they make these decisions.
Mm. And so part of this is a survey, correct?
Yeah. So it's a multiple choice. Most of it is a multiple choice survey. Some of it asks people to fill in a bit of text on their, and the questions, I can't say too much about it because I don't want to bias the results. But generally, the questions ask about things like the types of firearms-related activities you participate in. So, you know, hunting, the shooting sports, stuff like that. It asks about your opinion on a number of issues about firearms and identity. The survey, it takes less than 15 minutes to fill out. It's 100% anonymous, so you're never asked for any information that could be used to identify you. And it's been fully reviewed by my university's ethics board. There's information on that attached to the survey. And yeah, hopefully the response rate that I've seen so far has been amazing. It's been live for less than 2 days, and I've already got, you know, over 2,000 responses, which is really phenomenal. But the more people that we can get to fill out the survey, the better the quality of the research will be, and the more, the clearer, the more three-dimensional picture that we'll be able to get of gun ownership in Canada.
Okay, so what you're asking specifically is that anyone listening and any of their firearm-owning friends should take the time to fill that out just to kind of get a little bit more information about us. Now there's a live link to it, correct, that exists?
There's a live link. I've been speaking to Tracy and she's been helping to distribute that. I've been contacting, you know, a number of groups, some of the hunting groups as well, to try to get that sent out to their mailing lists. Hopefully we'll be able to put a link in the show notes as well.
Okay. Well, I will definitely do that. So you can pass that over to me. And then I believe we're going to be sending that out in our newsletter as well.
Thank you so much.
Good. So, you know, one final question, and it's from my, this is just, you know, kind of a selfish question for myself. So you have looked at the available literature on, you know, on a variety of firearm related issues in Canada, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so in your opinion, which is, you know, getting pretty close to being a genuine academic opinion, is the evidence clear and overwhelming that that further gun control is going to result in a benefit to public safety?
I think that the evidence is definitely not clear and overwhelming on that. I think that when we evaluate firearms policies, we have to look at sort of the, I have a tiered approach to looking at them. So, you know, number one, is it logical that this policy would result in a decrease in crime? So when we look at something like the assault weapons ban, you know, so-called assault weapons account for such a small proportion of firearms related violence in Canada. It's really not clear to me that that ban would have, you know, an impact on public safety. After that, I look at, you know, what's the available evidence on this? So when you're evaluating that evidence, once again, there's really not a lot of data out there on assault weapons. And to me, that suggests that, you know, if this was a huge problem, that, you know, we'd be able to see more data on it. And a lot of the research that we have to go by comes from the States. And that's, you know, as you know, it's really problematic because it's a completely different political context down there, especially with regards to firearms policy. So I think that we have to be careful when we evaluate these firearms policies to be saying, you know, is there really a clear, empirically provable benefit that we're going to get from this? And then also, you know, what's the potential harm that this policy could cause? And that's the side of the equation as well that often doesn't get talked about, because most Canadians don't really understand gun ownership, and they fill in a lot of the blanks on that from the image of gun owners that they have from the United States. You know, you look at a show like Tiger King that's been really popular right now, and it doesn't really present a very good image of firearms owners. So I think that if we can get the general public to understand more what gun owners are like in Canada, then we can hopefully help to correct that conversation.
Well, academic work like the stuff that you're doing is important to do that. And also the things that we've done as well with, you know, creating a television show where we have, you know, high quality documentary style representation of gun owners doing what gun owners do. They're out, you know, doing shooting sports, they're out at events, they're taking part at their shooting clubs, they're raising money for charity, they're doing all these things. And that's the side of gun owners that never gets presented to the public, and everything negative does. So just going back to my previous question and your answer, you know, I think I would imagine, and I'm not trying to lead you down a path, but, you know, to look at the available evidence in the Canadian context, and to describe that evidence as clear and overwhelming is probably, I probably would consider that to be an incredibly non-academic way to represent that data.
I think that would be misleading. I think, you know, any time that you're saying the literature on something is clear and overwhelming, you want to be starting to ask questions about where that person is drawing their data from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. I'm going to put a link to the survey in the description box below this if you're listening to this on YouTube. And we're going to send it out in our email newsletter. I'm recommending that people fill this out. You know, I've gotten to know Noah a little bit. I have a high degree of trust in him when he says there's nothing that's going to identify you, and that, you know, that he's just looking for the facts. And I think we need to do more of that, no matter where those facts lead. You know, it's not, I can't claim to be completely unbiased. I'm always going to be a little bit biased, but there's a difference between being biased and being dishonest. So we just want the real data so we can come up with real solutions. So I appreciate your work and I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate this.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 63 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks. You guys, I know it was a long one, but I think it was one of the most valuable podcasts we've ever done. I've got huge guests coming up. I've got Barry Holland, the author of No More Mr. Nice Guy, which is it's the go-to Canadian guide to defending yourself. I did two interviews with him and they are fascinating. I've still got another interview coming up with our friend Jeff Kilcollins from the Ottawa City Police as well. And then I've got a whole lineup of other guests. So I actually am not making enough podcasts to bring them all on. So really, really awesome. So again, thanks to Mark for coming on. Mark Petrone. Mark has a podcast. You can find him on Saga New 960. Okay, if you just search for that. You can also find his podcast called the Mark Petrone Podcast. And that's MarkPatrone. That's how you spell his name. So check him out. The podcast will get your blood pumping, that's for sure. And thanks very much for Noah Schwartz for just being an honest guy and being curious about stuff and not being intimidated into shutting up about something that more Canadians need to know about. So I have to thank Noah for his courage. It's not easy. And thank him for his work. So don't forget to share the gundebate.ca online quiz. That is your job. We've done our job to create that. It was an incredible amount of work, like 34 videos, that I had to produce, edit, upload, tag, copy links, you know, like it's the most tedious work I've had to do in a long time. But anyway, it's done. Thank God. But we've done that work. It's all waiting for you. There's prizes to be had there. We need you to spread those links and challenge people to take that quiz. Really important. Don't do it for us. Do it for yourself. You know, that's really who you're doing it for. So if you're in a position to support the CCFR, please do it. Become a member, donate, do it, whatever you can. If you're not, don't worry about it. Your role is to take an active, play an active part in advocating for your own ability to use and own firearms. Spread these links. Talk to people, show them what reasonable, good people gun owners are, and maybe we can stem this tide. Maybe we can hold back the assault from the Liberal Party of Canada and these other terrible groups. So, anyway, thanks again for listening, and we will see you all next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.